Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of My First Sketch at MyFirstSketch.com. I'm Josh Hyam. Any questions, thoughts, recommendations, you can feel free to email me at Josh@MyFirstSketch.com and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Like the podcast on Facebook at Facebook.com/MyFirstSketch, and it'd be really cool if you rate 5 stars and leave a review wherever you get the podcast. I can't believe it, we're already less than 3 weeks away from the start of Philly Sketch Fest. Shows start on Friday, May 31st, and continue through Saturday, June 8th. That's 15 shows with some of the best sketch comedy in North America. You can buy a festival pass and see everything for $100, which is a savings of about 55%, as opposed to buying everything individually. Or you can get night passes for $30 for Fridays and Saturday shows. All tickets and passes are available at phillysketchfest.simpletix.com. And speaking of Philly Sketch Fest, today's guest is Beth Ann Powers, currently a member of Rails Comedy based in Washington, D.C. Rails has a bunch of shows coming up this month, and I'll tell you more about them at the end, but the big one, at least in my opinion, will be appearing at Philly Sketch Fest along with Mean Wendy Band and Cam Wiley on Saturday, June 8th at 6:30 p.m. Beth Ann's first sketch is called Manic Pixie Dream Girl Delivery Service. Beth Ann reads the role as the service rep, as well as gives all the visual information. I read the role of Tom, the customer. And then we split the roles of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl examples. So let's get to the sketch.
So, woman sits at a desk typing on a computer. Tom enters, approaches the desk, and clears his throat. Hello, welcome to Manic Pixie Dream Girl Delivery Service. How may I help you?
Hi, I'm Tom, and my life is boring, and I'd like to order a girl to make me more interesting and help me grow as a person.
Very good, sir. I'm just going to have to ask you a few preliminary questions to make sure you are eligible for our program. Can you please confirm for me you are a straight white male?
Yes, of course.
Perfect, you're in.
Sweet. What now?
Now we begin the search for your ideal female companion. Here at the Manic Pixie Dream Girl Delivery Service, we carry many different brands of two-dimensional female support systems, and we are dedicated to find the perfect model to serve as a tool on your journey to discover yourself as a man. Please answer the following questions honestly to ensure we find your perfect match. Question one, would you describe yourself as A, an incurable womanizer who never believed in the power of love until you met the perfect girl, B, cynical and depressed after your heart was broken by another and you swore you'd given up on love until you discover the female who changes everything, or C, a nerdy sheltered guy who's a little insecure and needs a spark in his life?
Oh, it's definitely A. Speaking of which, what are you doing after this?
Easy, Tiger. I don't date clients. Okay, it's time for number question two. Bring out the ladies. Girls A, B, and C enter. As their corresponding letter is mentioned, they step forward. Which of the following would you prefer? A, the shy, awkward girl who was secretly beautiful all along.
Nobody ever noticed me until you did. And now you can validate my beauty and I can humanize you.
B, the offbeat, quirky one who's not like other girls, whatever that means.
Oh, daisies, they're so great. Bubbles, Earl Grey, that's so weird. Follow me on Tumblr.
Or C, the rebellious alternative girl whose exterior is tough but turns out to have a heart of gold. My name is Samantha, but I go by Roxy with two X's. I just never get along with other girls. There's just like so much drama. Let's go spray paint a bench and set fireworks off on the roof and go to a concert. I know the band.
I'm going to have to go with A. There's just something about her and nothing gets me going like a challenge.
Great. One last question. Since your manic pixie dream girl is only a rental, we are going to need to pick a way for her to exit your life. Would you prefer she A, die prematurely, maybe from a car crash or an incurable disease, most likely cancer of some sort, or B, mysteriously disappear without a trace, leaving you to contemplate what a wonderful mystery life is, or C, she decides you two won't work out and leaves you, eventually falling for another man?
Wait, what? Two of my choices are to have her die or go missing? That's horrible. I'll take C.
Really? Huh. That's actually a first. Most people go for the cancer. It's so dramatic. Plus, it gives you a nice little tragic backstory to make you seem more complicated. Oh, well, it's your choice, I suppose. Let me just do a few calculations here. There we go. We matched you with Maddie. She will be arriving in 5 to 7 days unless you'd like to upgrade to expedited shipping. If you do not experience character development with the first 4 months, we have a full refund policy.
Oh, great. Just the standard chip in will be fine, please.
Do you prefer cash, credit, or go for gold?
I'll do cash.
All right, that will be 77 cents, sir.
I only have a dollar.
Hands the woman a dollar. She does not give him change. Alrighty then, have a great day.
You too.
My name is Samantha Russell. I'm a sketch comedian, and I have a prop and costume hoarding problem. So I figured the best way to get it under control is to start a podcast. On Should I Keep This? I chat with other comedians about their experiences in comedy and our insane prop and costume collections. And on each episode, we both bring a beloved item to discuss whether it's a treasure or just trash. Sometimes it turns out no matter how much money or time we spent on a prop, the only thing we should be holding on to are the memories we've made along the way. So check out Should I Keep This? We have new episodes every 2 weeks, available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, Bethann.
Hey.
All right, so tell me about the sketch. Tell me where this came from. What's the idea?
Yeah, so this was a thing. Wrote it for back in college. I was a theater major at University of Minnesota, as I mentioned. And yeah, it was for, they do like a one act festival where it's like student, you know, submitted. And a couple of my friends and I wanted to do something, and like we had this kind of like joke for a sketch where it was a woman who's like whose real life didn't pass the Bechdel test, and she was like never talked about not to another woman, not a man, and like how does she go to a gynecology appointment, how does she like talk to her mom, like that was kind of the idea. And that was like, so we were like, well, we want to write that, but I guess we have to do a sketch show to like give a reason to like do this one sketch. So we sort of just submitted that. We called it the Bechdel Show because that was the sketch idea we had. But I was basically like, you know, all sort of gender media depictions of gender kind of themed sketches. Mm-hmm. And so we did that at the One Act Festival there, and actually ended up doing a second version of it right after we graduated college at a theater that's in the back of a bowling alley in Minneapolis.
I'm always confused by the venues that are in bowling alleys. Like,
yeah,
I don't understand it. I feel like the bowling is always going to be a problem for everything.
Well, it was like a bar with a bowling alley in the back, and then a theater in the back of the bowling alley type situation. But it was actually a really cool space, and they did. There was enough of a soundproof, I guess, wall between the bowling that it wasn't too much of an issue.
Did it change much between that first performance and the second one?
Yeah, it did, because we only repeated a couple sketches, and it was a mostly new group of people. So still friends from college, but different group. So it was a lot more, and it was a lot more, we had mixed in a lot more like gender and like more sexuality type themes. Mm-hmm. So it was a little more broad in that sense, or it had a lot of topics that we didn't quite broach in the first one,
how did the audience respond to it?
Really well. Yeah, I mean, enough that we decided we wanted to do it again. It was a lot of fun. It was kind of the first thing we like on our own sort of production we had done together, and that the three of us actually started a theater company after that, so it worked out staying
there in Minnesota, like
In Minnesota. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, after the pandemic, I went to grad school. Well, two of us went to grad school. We haven't done anything since that. Mm-hmm. And we're all kind of moved. But it's a, you know, good four years or so there. We were did a lot of theater shows in that bowling alley.
Wow. OK.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the beginning. I'm assuming since you were a theater major,
mm-hmm.
you were a performer kid, theater kid in high school and everything. So. Yep. What was that experience? Were there any particular roles that you absolutely loved, like, or did you just like have that theater kid stereotype of like craving attention at all costs.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, I was a very early on, I was like, you know, decided I want to be an actor when I was like four. And so I was, you know, early theater kid. I was very much like an acting and not quite so much musical theater kid. So I feel like I didn't quite, have the stereotypical. I was always very into acting. I also could not sing and dance very well. So I was very much chorus mostly. I got to get a good couple like roles in the like fall plays or whatever. I guess favorite role from that period of time. It was a show called Play On, which is like a play within a play, where it's like a theater company putting on a play. Is like the premise, but it all goes crazy. And I got to play the like crazy playwright character, which ended up being fortuitous because I now have a grad degree in playwriting. So it was foreshadowing.
Was there a preference between comedic roles versus dramatic roles for you?
Yeah, it's funny because I actually was very much thought of myself as a very like serious dramatic actor, but would always get like the bit roles in the plays. But I did like we did a speech and debate, and I always did like a dramatic piece for that. Mm. It was acting categories. They had humorous, and I always did the very serious, tragic one.
I feel with that kind of performance because I know the kids that did that in my mm-hmm. high school. Mm-hmm. You probably had to go dramatic over a comedic monologue. That's probably a better bet. I feel.
It was forensics specifically, and so they have like a dramatic category, humorous category, and the humorous one is like it's less of a monologue and more like you are playing all of the characters in a little 10-minute
I don't want that.
Yeah, it's great. It's like you have to like pop in between the characters, and there's like a certain technique you have to do to like switch in the characters, and it's a wild time. But looking back, I'm like, I kind of wish I had done that just to like have done it. That sounds fun. But I was very much serious. And then later on was like, I am obviously fighting being the like comedic person when I should not be, because that's definitely more my thing.
Did you have a sense of comedy growing up? Like, were you into watching comedies? Were you a fan? Like what made you laugh growing up?
Yeah, I definitely liked comedy. I grew up in my dad is a pastor. So there was definitely a lot that was, off limits to me. I definitely, you know, snuck in a lot of, like Lonely Island and like things I could get like access to online when I got a little older and had access to the internet. But otherwise, I was limited to, sort of what I was allowed to watch. So my comedy growing up was more like, Gilligan's Island and like
going all the way back to like the quote unquote like safe like 60s and 70s reruns.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was what my dad got for us to watch.
And it's really interesting that you mentioned like Lonely Island, because I feel like there are so many of their sketches that are so G-rated and simple and clean.
Yeah.
Like it's either completely G-rated and clean, or straight to hard R.
Yeah.
And I've never really thought about that before. Like, because Lonely Island just started a podcast with them and like Seth Meyers talking about like they're going like episode by episode of all of the short films that they did for SNL. Mm-hmm. And like the first one was just about them eating lettuce on the stoop. Like, you know, and then Lazy Sunday.
Yeah.
Natalie Portman raps. Like, all like. We haven't gotten to like I'm on a boat or I just had sex, but yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm curious about that now. I gotta look into that. Mm-hmm. They're giant swings from PG to
definitely.
Because your father was a pastor, was mm-hmm. there like that extra bit of like sneakiness, like forbidden fruit kind of feel to some of the stuff?
Yeah, kind of. It's I was telling that to somebody, and he was like, well, he was basically just daring you to be a comedian. which I like. So yeah, I mean, there was kind of where I would like, I would definitely like felt very rebellious if I would ever like watch something that was not on the approved list. It was also his, it was kind of a funny, he had a very funny sort of way of deciding what we couldn't go watch, which is basically just like, if he thought it was funny, it's fine. Even if it was not like, it wasn't quite as much just like the content of whether he liked it or not. So like, you know, he would watch like King of the Hill, but we couldn't watch Simpsons like type thing. Like it was, or we could watch like, I don't know. There's, you know, we could watch Spaceballs because he thought that was funny, or like,
I think I understand the King of the Hill versus Simpsons thing because Bart's such a the rebellious like kid, where King of the Hill is like quietly subversive,
and you don't see
that. Like, if you're not looking for that subversion of it, you're not going to see it. Like, okay, so you decide to go to Minnesota for theater school. Why Minnesota?
I originally was doing, I did the whole like BFA audition thing, and basically like applied to, a large amount of colleges and the whole, like, you know, the grind of like auditioning for all the programs, and, ended up being like, okay, I got into a couple that are, I can go into debt for like a very long time. Cause like, a lot of them are, you know, the very expensive private school thing, or I could pick a BA program from one of the schools that I applied to. And it was kind of a whim decision where I was like, I don't feel great about a lot of these options, but this one seems like it might be cool, and I'm just gonna go with it. I don't know. It was a very like, it was also the one that was gave me the most scholarship, and so
I mean, that's totally fair too. Are you from Minnesota? Like, was that
I had literally never been there before. Okay. I don't know. I couldn't tell you back now what my high school self was like. Yes, I'm gonna like move halfway across the country having never been there before. But yeah, I think I just was like, you know what? I wanna change. I wanna like get a.
Where are you from originally?
Like, oh, I'm from New Jersey. Yeah. Okay. I guess that would be good context. Yeah.
I guess Minnesota like is far enough.
It's
but
far,
not too far. Like,
yeah, it's not terrible.
You're not completely across the country, but it still feels like a random choice.
It does, a little bit. I know. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird describing it later. It was just kind of like, I had visited a lot of the schools that were nearby that I could afford, and I was kind of like, I don't love any of these, and I don't know what I'm doing. And then like, I had heard like just researching, and Minneapolis actually has like a really, really amazing theater community. Well,
Twin Cities have like that great vibrant music scene. There's a huge history there with like. Mm-hmm. I mean, being like basic, but talking about Prince and like, I mean, my favorite band, The Hold Steady, comes from Minneapolis originally. Like, so I totally understand it. And I don't want to like crap on like those smaller, quote unquote, flyover states.
Cause
they need art too. Mm-hmm. Like,
Well, the reason I originally applied is because they have the like Guthrie program there. Cause like the Guthrie is a very big, for profit theater that they have a school connected to it, so like the BFA acting program there is like very highly rated.
Oh, very cool.
So that was why I had originally applied to the school, and then it was sort of just trying to like figure out which because I had not like planned to do the BA route. I feel like I'm talking about there's like a very specific culture of like BFA versus BA in college, and it's a very different vibe. So I was like, I was just kind of trying, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I just kind of went on a whim, and it ended up working out. It was a very it's a very like weird little experimental like program. It's like the weird cousin of the very serious BFA thing there, and
that's great. Yeah. Be the weird cousin for sure. So you graduate and you start this little theater company in a theater in the back of a bowling alley.
Yeah.
What kind of material are you putting up?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the first thing we did was the sketch. And we'd actually done before that, the first thing we did together technically was a little web series that we decided that we were going to learn how to do, and wasn't great, but that was, a big learning experience anyway. So we had done that, and then we did the sketch, and then, so we were, did a lot of like following that devised stuff, which is like, a theater where you're not working off a script. You're kind of, you like generate the material in the rehearsal room and then make
it
go that way. Is the best way to describe it. So it was a lot of, we were like, we wanted to make collaborative work, and it was it ended up being mostly comedies. We call ourselves, we were like, we make like playful collaborative stuff, but it was like basically a lot of comedy stuff. So the, we did a show called Punk Rock Sock, which was about a punk rock sock puppet band. So we had like a,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah. We did like some garages, and we had musicians in the back playing, but then we like did puppets like playing little fake.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. So I got to be, my character was Billy Toe Armstrong in that one. And it was all just, it was like pop punk songs with sock pun, pop punk songs with sock puns. It was like, Wake Me Up When Socktember Ends and like stuff like that.
So, and you mentioned like how the pandemic starts into this, like, so what happens with that theater group?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that towards the end of when we were in there doing that, we started a show called Too Fast to Shakespeare, which was kind of a drunk Shakespeare, but you're doing like you take a Shakespeare show and you do it the whole thing in an hour and with like drinking games and all of that. So we started doing that because it made us some money because people want to go and drink alcohol. And so we started doing that. So that was like the last thing we did was get all the way up to a production of Too Fast to Hamlet, and then it got canceled. The pandemic. I was like trying to figure out what I was talking about. So the pandemic. So then I had already been applying to playwriting grad school at that point, and like knew I was pretty soon after that, knew I was going to be moving to Pittsburgh for Carnegie Mellon to do grad school. So that was sort of we wanted to keep trying to do stuff like remotely, but you know, grad school's a lot. And then one of the other people started a cartooning grad school soon after that. And so then it was kind of like, we never ended up being able to get something, but you know, maybe one day we'll get back together. We would talk about doing like a podcast or a, you know, something more digitally since we don't live in the same place, but yeah.
So you're going from Minnesota to Pittsburgh now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why Pittsburgh? Why Carnegie Mellon? I mean, Carnegie Mellon's a great school for, you know, for everything, but like, mm-hmm. why Pittsburgh?
I mean, Pittsburgh didn't play into it so much as just like the school program. I really wanted to find a school that was like a good playwriting program that was in a theater department, which some, all of them are in the English ones. So I definitely, but I was like, oh, I want to be in the theater community around all the theater people, which was funny because half of it, we were online the whole time anyway, but unfortunately. It was basically like that was the playwriting program I got into out of the ones I applied for.
Okay.
And so I went there.
And you're stuck because of the pandemic. So you're now doing your MFA online on Zoom, like Zoom classes and everything. Yeah. Just
the first year was all on Zoom, which I was definitely like, I was like, if I was going for any other theater subject than playwriting, I would probably have like tried to defer something because like that's just not the same. But writing, you know, you're sitting in a room on a computer anyway. So I went through that, which it was definitely, it's definitely still a hard thing. And it's especially like the playwriting program is very isolated in a way because everybody else is kind of like they're getting their practicum through like working on the shows and stuff, but like as a playwright you can't really work on the shows because they're already written.
Your part's already done for the most part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's, I mean, we do like when you graduate, you do like a production that you wrote, and then you get to work with the other like theater people. But up until then, you're kind of not doing a lot with them because Yeah, it's just not like there's not really a practical way to like work on a show as a playwright that's already been written and is being put up. But yeah, so like the Zoom thing definitely like made that a lot harder. But so luckily the second year we did come back, and that was I was definitely very glad I got to have like at least one on campus year for sure.
Isn't it like historically, like didn't Godspell come through that? Carnegie Mellon?
It might have. I know Stephen Schwartz.
Yeah, I think originally Godspell was like someone's senior project.
Maybe. I did not know that, but that.
Yeah. Godspell began as a project by drama students at Carnegie Mellon because.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved off Broadway.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Because what should we call it? Sonia Manzano, who was from like she was the original cast, and then she didn't do the well. I love Godspell. It's one of my mm-hmm. favorite things. She didn't do the movie because she got cast on Sesame Street.
Oh wow!
And then she became Maria on Sesame Street for like 40 years. So uh-huh. I mean, good for her. Like,
yeah.
Yes, I mean, I guess that's a great program. So you have a year of real in-person, people-to-people, actual time to work. What's the next step after you get your MFA?
So that was, I, at the time, had thought that I was going to try and, like, move to LA and start doing, like, TV writing. Because it is a dual program, so there's a screenwriting element.
Okay.
And that's, you know, you definitely get a lot of like, that's, if you want to make money, that's what you got to do. And you know, and I knew I really liked writing comedy. And so like I was like, oh, I'll do a half hour sitcom and I'll write be in a writer's room. And then, graduated and very quickly was like, the job market is horrible and I cannot just move out to LA with no anything. I was like, I need some kind of job of some kind at least. And so I spent a lot of time job searching there, and then just kind of job searching anywhere that I could stand to live, because I was living at my parents' house. I was like, I gotta get out of here. So that was like 3 months of that, and then ended up getting a teaching job in Falls Church, Virginia, which is very close to DC. So then moved out here.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's how I ended up where I'm at now.
So, like, what kind of teaching is it?
I was a middle school theater teacher.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Very fun. All right, so you're now in the DC, you know, you're now in the DMV.
Mm-hmm.
What steps are you taking, or if any, to get on stage, to get writing? Like, how are you scratching your own art itch?
Yeah, so I, well, the first thing I did when I got there was, I was like, I need to meet people and be in a community. And I Googled sketch comedy in DC, and clicked on Rails Comedy, and they were the group that was had an open submission at the time, and so I submitted to that and got in there, and became very much my like main artistic sort of outlet. You know, still doing playwriting stuff as much as I could, but
when you say open submission, like did you have to like submit a packet of your work, or like what was the process?
I think I had to send in 3 sketches and just like a little blurb about myself, but like my experience or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're pretty much right in with that after that first, like.
Yeah, I was very lucky that I like kind of went right at the right time when they were like taking people. A couple of weeks later was working on a show with them.
So from what I know from Rails is that a lot of them had to come together from the University of Maryland.
Yes. Yeah.
So what was it like for you to become like this new entrant into this group of a bunch of people that know each other and have been working together for a bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they definitely have since grown sort of beyond that. So there's been a lot of transition. So it wasn't there wasn't too much of a, I think by that point, a lot of the UMD people had circled out, or it was a lot more of a mix. It was also, that month, they happened to have brought in like a handful of new people. So there was like 3 of us
Okay.
So you weren't
the only person walking into this room of all the okay. That's always helpful for sure.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It was like luck worked out that way too, because it's not always, that's not always the case, but it was just like they needed a lot of people. So I was going in with a group of new people, and so I didn't feel too like on the outside, which was nice.
As you're getting ingratiated into Rails and stuff, so tell me about like the idea, because I know of Rails Comedy as the sketch team, but I also know Rails Comedy as like the production arm where they're putting on shows and doing stuff. Are you involved on both sides of it? Are you just more writing, producing, like writing, performing, or helping produce the other stuff?
I was on the like team for the Sketch Fest, the planning team. And so that was really my first like big producing with them kind of thing, or like sketch stuff. But otherwise I was mostly just doing the like house team, house Rails team. Yeah.
How would you describe like a Rails Comedy sketch show? Or someone that's never seen it?
Yeah. So I would say it's all very, we have a very like silly energy. It's a lot of costumes and props, and we kind of go all in on that front. And it's, I think we have a very like just wacky sort of whimsical sense of humor. I don't know. It's very like a lot of big characters type thing.
And I also know that Rails also dips into improv. Have you dipped your toe into improv?
I've done it in the sense that like it's hard to do theater and not have improv happen. At some point, I've never really was a improv person. I never really pursued it outside of like theater, like just doing it by virtue of doing theater and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Have you noticed a difference in your approach from your ability as a playwright versus your sketch writing? Obviously the big thing would be length of material, and I guess mostly scene versus entire show, but like have you noticed like a difference in how you approach it?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, I definitely had noticed a lot. Like, it was definitely a growth process of like figuring out that sort of shift. I think my big thing is that I think it's when you're writing a play, it's the play that's funny is like the jokes are there to tell a story, whereas as a sketch, it's like the story exists to tell jokes.
Yeah.
And so I think that would be the big difference is like, you know, in an ideal play, every joke is serving a purpose that in like a narrative purpose of some kind. And I think in the other opposite way, it's like, okay, every element of the sketch, like the story is there to facilitate jokes. So if you're having a lot of extraneous detail, that's not, you know, that's stuff that can kind of go. It's definitely, and like, you know, the length thing is definitely a big thing. Plays are very dialogue-y and wordy, which is great, and a lot of ways is great for sketch, because the dialogue can be a big, you know, opportunity for jokes. But it's also, you know, trying to cut it down to like, definitely it's, you know, less is more kind of thing with sketch.
That whole brevity is the solo wick thing.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that was definitely, I think that was the biggest learning curve, was just learning how to write in a way that we're just like, this thing's really tight.
Because I'll admit, like, as we were reading
it's very wordy,
your script, that one block,
that
first question that she asked, I'm like, oh, I would hate to be the actor that has to perform that. Like,
yes. Yeah. I definitely, looking back, am like, yeah, this is a lot of talking.
Like, that's something I guess I even cheat when I write like monologues for myself. Like, that, like, I never space it too many, like a full paragraph at once. Like, I always try to throw like an action beat in there. Just to break it up for myself, so that like it doesn't feel so like, holy crap, this is so many words. Like,
yeah.
That's just me tricking myself. Like,
that was definitely like, I think if you were to look at like a timeline of all of my sketches, that would be the biggest like transition, is like slowly figuring out how not don't do that, like make them talk less, you don't need all of this.
I mean, they can talk as much as they want, just maybe not fully
right. Well,
you paragraphs at a time, like,
well, yeah, chunks of text. Yeah, that's, and I think I've broken myself of it mostly, but like that definitely was a very big tendency of mine. I think that somewhat comes from playwriting. I mean, you know, actors there are probably not gonna like giant chunks of monologues either, but yeah, I don't know. I think I've always been a very like dialogue based writer, and so like having the characters like talk their way through the thing is like kind of how my process has kind of or like the habit I've kind of come to, and so that results in a lot of words, and so then it's a matter of like, okay, but how do I do this not with like a quarter of the amount of talking.
You said you grew up in New Jersey. Were you more like where in New Jersey were you? Were you close to Philly? Were you close to New York? Were you in that middle place that no one cares about? Like,
No, I was pretty close to New York.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like we were like on the train line to
New York. So my question does make sense here. So growing up like in the shadows of New York and then moving to Minnesota, spending some time in Pittsburgh, and now that you're in the DC area, have you noticed a difference in the collective art scenes?
Yeah.
Now granted, New York's gonna be the big one, so we can like throw that away, I guess, for the most part. But like between those mid-major cities where's University of Minnesota? Is that in St. Paul? Or it is Minneapolis. Okay. Yeah. So Minneapolis, Pittsburgh, DC. Like, have you noticed differences there?
Yeah, for sure. What like theater scene wise, it's Minneapolis is a lot of very indie theater, a lot of weird like experimental stuff, a lot of like small, it's a lot of small theaters, a lot of like the indie scene is really, really great out there. It's a really great place to try and like do your own stuff. Like it was as someone who started a theater company there, like, there's a lot of resources there for that kind of thing, and so I really loved it there because it's just, there's like it's a lot of new work, a lot of, you know, people doing cool stuff on their own. DC is from not that from my experience. I was like surprised at how hard it was to find like a theater ticket anywhere that was below like $50. And I was like, in Minneapolis, you're probably going to pay what you can, or like $10, you can find stuff. So that, just like that culture is very different. And then, but DC has a comedy scene and Minneapolis doesn't so much. Like they have some stand-up. There is one improv theater that's like pretty big there, but there's not a lot.
It's all improv.
Yeah, it's all improv. And even that is like, there's one theater where they do improv. So there's really not much of a sketch scene whatsoever. You know, the improv scene is very minimal.
I'm curious about that because like I had recently talked to Christy from Forevermore in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
And she went to school in Oklahoma and she made the point that like because you were in Oklahoma, basically if you wanted arts, you had to fund them yourself. Mm-hmm. So a bunch of people were like, all right, we'll be patron of the arts and we'll go crazy. And I wonder if that's kind of the same with Minnesota too, where like, yeah, we're in the middle of like in the middle of the country where it snows and it's hockey all year. If we want theater to happen, we have to like be benefactors and do it ourselves and like finance it ourselves and move on. Where I don't think DC has that issue because DC is, you know, a government town where you really don't think necessarily like going there for the arts.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, I hadn't thought about it in that way before, but it's definitely like, I think it's also like, I think the audience has a lot to do with the theater culture that happens there. Like are people, you can have a lot of indie theater if you got people who are going to go to that. And I think DC, you have people who can afford $50 theater tickets. Yeah. So you sell $50 theater tickets. In Minneapolis, you know, the, you know, you go to the Guthrie, you can pay that much, but otherwise most people, you're not going to get a lot of people who are like, yes, I want to go out and see a expensive theater show. So I think that also plays a lot into it, but yeah, no, I think you're right. It is definitely a different culture and different, like, yeah, I don't know. I think regional theater in general is like, I would say, I think there's a lot of like, I think that's where a lot of the sighting stuff is happening, is like away from the sort of New York broader.
It at least starts there for sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not that there's not so exciting happening in New York. That's not what I mean. But I think there's just like, I just think there's a lot of exciting, like a lot of exciting things happening. If you go branch out of there.
So, I mean, while you're, you know, in Rails and you're coming to Philadelphia as part of Rails, I've been hearing murmurs of this thing called Chaps in DC. So tell me about Chaps.
Yeah. So Chaps is an all women's group and we recently started in DC, since we started it, cause we didn't really have anything like that here. It was me and another woman in Rails, kind of the only other woman in Rails. We've had a couple people come in and out, but I mean, I shouldn't say that because there have been women who have been in it and then moved or like come right. in, but like consistently currently
the two that are there now.
Yes, the two that are there now, unless, you know, we have the occasional person who we bring in for a show, but like the two like actual regular current real members who do like shows consistently, yeah, there's two of us. And when there was like a period of time where she couldn't do a lot of shows, and it was like, okay, this is the fourth show where I'm the only woman in it, and I definitely am starting to feel this. So I was like, and you know, I think there are so many like funny, really talented women here, and there are a lot of groups. I'd say, you know, more often than not, the groups are at least half, if not more, men. And so I was like, I think that's something that like is needed here, and I think after like literally just saying it out loud, like people were coming up to me and be like, can I be in the group? So I was like, oh, okay, yes, this is a thing that like needs to exist.
Yeah, because I have been hearing of an all women team in DC for 7 years now, like, and I don't know if someone's just never pulled the trigger on it, or
yeah, I don't know.
Other things were happening that they couldn't do it yet. Mm-hmm. But like, so has Chaps done a full show yet?
Not yet. So we our first performance was this past month. We did like, we have a thing called Etch a Sketch that mm-hmm. Rails actually produces, which is like sort of a sketch open mic-y type thing. You kind of like get 10 minutes. And so we did 10 minutes there. Which is kind of how actually has been a lot of the new sketch groups that have been happening have kind of come out of just people doing that. So that was kind of our thought of just kind of like trying to, you know, get off our feet and, you know, start writing together and then hopefully build to doing more like independent stuff. But yeah.
How has it been to collaborate with other women that also have other sketch teams and bringing in different perspectives from their other groups?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's been great. Like it was a really great experience working with everybody. I think having people who have different sketch, like are from different sketch places, you can kind of take what works from like what people have done in the past and take what you want and leave what you don't. And you know, I think, you know, sketch is best when it's very like, it's a very collaborative environment. Like yep. I'm very into, you know, writer's room. Like we all give notes on everything and we all are kind of very communal with it. Like, I think that, at least for me, like that's my favorite way to do it. And I think people were very, very down for that too, Chaps wise. And so it was a very like very collaborative, very supportive group of people. And so, it was a really great first run, so excited to do more of that.
So there's no full show on the schedule yet?
Not currently. This is very early.
We're at the beginning of it. Yeah.
This is about like, you know, at most, you know, a month and a half, 2 months in the making. So not quite yet, but yeah, definitely working towards that.
do you like, I mean, you mentioned that like those first few things that you did in that post college time in Minnesota where, you know, dealing with, you know, the women's experience, are you, I don't want to say like going back to that, or are you just like freer to do more in that space now?
Yeah, we talked about like, we didn't want to make it a thing where it's like, okay, you have to write about women. You have to write, like, you have to do this. This is like, you're limited to this topic. I think we were like, yeah, we can play dudes. We can do whatever. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be women focused. This is more like, I think the goal is more like, this is a place where you can do the sketches that you can't do when you only have two women on the team, either because, you know, it's just, you know, the group it doesn't get traction, or you don't have the people to play the parts, or it's just not, you know, people are, you know, it's like sort of humor that like, maybe they don't understand, or they're not, I don't know. I think it's like, just things that like, don't quite work in a male dominated room. And I don't think that means necessarily like they are about women, just kind of like, what things have you not been able to do that you wanted to do?
I ask everybody, we didn't like really talk about watching SNL, but I do ask everyone, who is your favorite SNL cast member?
Current or ever?
All time. I mean, all time. We can talk about current later, but all time first.
Okay. Well, like I said, you're talking to someone who grew up in a Christian household where SNL is not allowed. So I will preface and say that my SNL like watching experience is limited. But having gotten a lot of my rebellious comedy from Lonely Island, I would probably say Andy Samberg.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He is such like a huge voice in the time that he was there. Like,
yeah.
The switch to the digital shorts like completely changed like that approach where everyone was doing it, and now we had Please Don't Destroy doing it, like, and then like, yeah, just he brought this like, not, I don't want to say anarchy is not the right word, but like, and not danger either, danger is the wrong word too, but like anything could happen with him. Like, he was a bizarre dude who didn't fit a lot of the things. Like, he's very like open about like not being good at impressions, not being good at like those kinds of things. So like, that's SNL's hallmark. Like, I mean, the first time he's on the show basically is him making fun of the fact that he's not good at impressions, and Bill Hader's amazing at them. Like, Andy Samberg is an interesting dude.
Yeah, for sure.
As we're winding down, because I'm sure I missed something, but there's always a part two. So I, you know, we get a little deeper at the end. So coming up through the theater program, getting an MFA and as a playwright, doing more sketch comedies, and now teaching theater to middle schoolers, what's something that you've learned from sketch comedy that you would pass on to a new writer?
Well, I would say, as a teacher, I have had the chance to teach some comedy writing, and it is what I love about it is it's a thing, like comedy is a thing where I think there's kind of the notion where you are funny or you're not funny, and in reality, like, if you want to write comedy, it's a skill that you have to practice and that you can practice and you can learn. And I think just being able to be like, saying like, you know, you can be funny if you want to. You don't have to, like, you can learn, this is something you can learn how to do, and it's, you know, there's a science to it, and there's like a technique to it. It's not like you're funny or you're not. And I think that that's something that's very empowering. And I think that was, you know, when I started sort of starting to formally like study comedy at all, like, that was a big thing for me of just like putting into words and like being like, oh, this is something that you can learn to do. This is something you can get better at. And you know, and reversely, if you think that it is something that you're automatically good at, you don't have to learn how to do it. That's how you get a lot of shitty comedians, I think.
Yeah.
But so I think, you know, I think it's just, it feels very empowering, especially like if you are, I think being a woman, even, you're not made to think of yourself that way as much, or like you are, I just think you're there's like a different socialization of like, I definitely caught myself being like, yeah, even like I talked about, like as an actor, I didn't go for comedy, but for drama, and it just kind of felt like what I was supposed to be doing. And I think it's just like a shift in mindset of like, if this is something you want to do, like you can do it, and you can just sit down and kind of learn how. And I think it's something that's worth doing. Yeah, if that makes sense. So I just think anyone can be funny if they want to. If you want to learn how.
Comedy is one of those things that there is an art to it, but there also is a craft to it. Like,
yeah.
There is a, like, you know, a craftsperson mindset to it where you do have to hone it. You do have to practice. You can learn the tricks. You can learn, you know, all those little tips and nuances that we all exploit a lot. So, mm-hmm. like, even if we do it subconsciously, like, mm-hmm. yeah, you might be, like, funnier naturally, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be the best comedy writer, too.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. One of those things about if you ever go to like a comedy, like a sketch writing class, like at a theater, mm-hmm. you'll mm-hmm. get the person that's like, oh, I'm the office cut up. I'm the funny person in the comic, like in the office, and they're garbage. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's like, I feel like you could tell like which people are the people who like, someone told them they were funny when they were 12 and they've not grown since then. They were like, cool, do this forever.
And then simply put, like, I mean, you know, after all your experience in the theater and, you know, you saying that when you moved to DC, one of the first things you found out was searching for some kind of sketch comedy component. So why is comedy like such a big part of your adult life?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think it's always, I don't know, it's always just been like a natural part of my writing. And I think it was in grad school that I really kind of learned to own that and be like, no, this is like what I really love to do. But I think comedy is really, really powerful. Like, I think, you know, as a playwright, I think you can do, I think it's, you know, comedy open is like a way to open people and like connect with people.
Yeah.
You can, you know, hit a lot harder in a lot of ways doing some like coming at something through comedy than through drama a lot of times. And I think that's what I've sort of leaned towards. And I just think, you know, comedy is a very inherently, you know, empathetic in a lot of ways. Like it's, you know, it's about having like a mutual understanding or a shared, you know, it's a shared experience. And so I think, yeah, I think it's just, I love it because it's a tool of connection. And I think it's a, you know, as a storyteller, like it's just a way to open people up to like whatever you want to talk about. And it's also just like it feels good to make people laugh also, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for sure, like as to what you're saying, like comedy mm-hmm. is that spoonful of sugar that you can, you know, mm-hmm. entice someone with to lay down mm-hmm. some kind of truth and mm-hmm. you know, really make a point. Like, and mm-hmm. yeah, making people laugh is great.
Yeah, my screenwriting teacher told me that I should, my like marketing pitch for myself should be that I write things that make you laugh and then punch you in the dick. So and I think, yeah, I think comedy is great for that.
That works. Yeah, for sure. All right, thanks, Beth Ann.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Tons happening for Beth Ann and Rails Comedy in the next month, so I'll highlight a couple. Etch-A-Sketch on Wednesday, May 15th, and The Character Show on Wednesday, May 29th. Both of those shows are at the DC Arts Center. Tickets and more info about all Rails shows and classes can be found at railscomedy.com. You can also find Rails all over social media at Rails Comedy. Rails Comedy is heading to Austin, Texas on Saturday, May 25th in the 10 p.m. block, along with John Blair and Group Chat. ATX Sketchfest for more on that one. And then Rails comes to Philly Sketchfest on Saturday, June 8th, with a show at 6:30, also featuring Cam Wiley and the Mean Wendy Band. PhillySketchFest.com for tickets and more information on that one. My First Sketch is a Philly Sketchfest production. You can find out more information at phillysketchfest.com. Follow Philly Sketchfest on Instagram at Philly Sketchfest. The music on this episode is by the band No-No, which you can check out at nonoband.bandcamp.com. Like My First Sketch on Facebook, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This is Josh Hyam. Thanks for listening. Come to Philly Sketchfest.